Okay, is it? So are those my?
Yeah.
So I'm doing When Harry Met Sally. Always be my maybe.
Yeah. And these are films of life.
And Say Anything or Sleepless in Seattle.
I'm sure that we will mention Sleepless in Seattle during that When Harry Met Sally.
Okay.
Combo.
Sleepless in Seattle and When Harry Met Sally are two movies that I would back myself to quote from beginning to end. Every time I could do the whole thing. Amazing. And Clueless.
That's so good.
Yeah. I'm proud of myself. I mean, I think it's good that's what I'm using my limited brain power for.
You know, the 10% of the brain that you get to use,
yeah.
You filled it with
remembering entire movies from beginning to end. And also
Rob Reiner movies. So readers, listeners.
You can tell what our primary medium is.
Yeah. So listeners. Actually, we sound like we're having a good time, but we've actually gathered here to remember the ghost of Emily's affection for Timothée Chalamet, which died at the Oscars. Emily, would you like to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's been a roller coaster of a week for me, to be honest. So first there was the anticipation of what Timothée Chalamet would wear to the Oscars. Then there was
The anticipation looked like this. Several photographs of his hair and clothes he's worn before shared with me.
Then there was the actuality of what Timothée Chalamet wore to the Oscars.
The shock.
The shock.
The shock, I think. The stages of grief. There was the shock.
Just played out.
There was the denial.
The bargaining.
There was definitely anger. I'm not sure if we're at acceptance yet, Emily. Are we?
I sort of felt better. I mean, there were two elements to the outfit. There was the actual clothes, which I was thinking auto mechanic on the red carpet. The best description that I saw was Timothée Chalamet came dressed as a parking valet for the Oscars.
It was so accurate.
It was a shell suit.
It
was an actual shell suit. But had
cuffs on the legs.
He does this thing where he tucks his pants into his socks. It's a thing.
That's not a thing.
It's his thing.
Oh, God.
But then...
how did you not see this coming if that was his thing?
There was the fact that he... and this is where the bigger affront comes to me, I think.
Yeah.
Slicked back his hair. He slicked back his hair, Kylie.
You know, he has actually got... don't take this the wrong way, and please don't hit me or anything, but he has actually got quite a sinister face. Like, he could have quite a sinister face. He's got a big future ahead of him as a bad guy.
No, he does. You're absolutely right.
And... the floppy curly hair kind of is a nice counterbalance.
Yes, it
to the
softens
sinister face.
The whole thing. Like, it makes so the angular face beautiful,
slicked,
not
exactly.
Sociopath.
When it was slicked back, it was a bad scene. And I could feel you sitting next to me because we were live blogging. I could feel the pain radiating from you.
It was hard. It was difficult for me. And then I was so excited that he was going to stand next to Natalie Portman. I was like, they're going to crack the screen with their combined beauty.
Beautiful thing.
It was hard. But then, today, there's been...
Light at the end of the tunnel.
Because what we have had today is the first series of stills from Wes Anderson's upcoming film, The French Dispatch.
The French Dispatch, which looks so f***ing beautiful.
Take Timothée Chalamet out of that and I'm still...
he's still there, 100%.
Yeah. I don't need him to make this film exciting for me.
Are they the real...
unlike Dune, which we'll get to it in a later podcast.
Stay tuned, guys.
But anyway, so the floppy hair's back. The trailer comes out tomorrow.
And it's Saoirse Ronan in that as well, though.
She does have a role in it.
I'm sure I've seen pictures of them together in a faux, charmingly French street.
It's the fake French town.
Yeah,
it's called Ennui sur Blasé.
What does that mean?
Like boredom on... Blasé is like, whatever.
Cute.
So that trailer comes out tomorrow. By the time our listeners listen to this,
We'll put it in our show notes for you.
Started work early so that I can write about it.
We will pop show notes in for you because one of my favourite websites, which I've forgotten off the top of my head, but will include in the show notes, shared some sort of sneaky pics from that a wee while back, and that was really nice. Oh, Messy Nessie Chic. Do you know?
No. You'll have to share it with me.
Yeah, you'll really like it. It's this woman who lived in Paris, actually.
I love Wes Anderson.
So do I.
So, yeah, so I feel like...
We might have to do a whole Wes Anderson podcast.
When French Dispatch comes out.
Yeah.
That's a marvellous idea.
Listeners and readers. Listeners, but mostly listeners. Drop us a line and tell us what you think about us doing a Wes Anderson episode.
And if you want us to do one, because it's quite a big canon now, what are your absolute must-includes?
Yes.
Cool. Yeah. Anyway, so Timmy, it got bad, it went dark, really but dark. I feel like I'm starting to sort of spelunk my way out of the cave.
Spelunking for Chalamet. The Emily Brooks story.
That's my next podcast.
I had no such upsets because Chris Evans wasn't even there. That's my upset.
That is truly disappointing.
Yeah.
You know what saved me from utter despair? Well, there are a few things, but the main thing was Janelle Monáe just being there and being almighty. Janelle Monáe and wearing that
the sensational
amazing
dress. Which Billy Porter called Grace Jones on Fire or something along those lines, but yeah.
I mean, yeah, there is something really Grace Jonesy about it. What she managed to do with that dress, I think, and it's a really hard balance to find and a hard tightrope to draw, but she managed to wear something that was utterly original, but still drew from, like, current trends. I mean, silver, like, metallic was a massive trend on the red carpet and was not at all ridiculous.
It was sequins, too. There was sequins literally everywhere.
Everywhere. So I was wearing sequins.
You were wearing sequins.
So it was like, I just think that's really unusual to find a dress that's attention-grabbing for being totally unique, but still totally on trend and totally fierce and amazing, and she's totally fierce and amazing. What other dresses did you love, Kylie?
So there were a few, but the one dress that really stood out to me was Maya Rudolph's, and I know that that's controversial.
It stood out to me too.
But that's part of what I love about it. It's so unapologetically like, fuck you, look at my dress. It goes for miles.
Because it's a caftan.
Because it's a giant red sequined caftan. It's almost offensive. I loved it so much. I loved it so much. I loved it. I loved it. I loved it.
I found it actually offensive. But at least no one will ever call their dress boring. Like, at least... And, you know, I think that was a good thing about the red carpet this year, is that there were a lot of dresses where you were like, huzzah, what the hell?
So Natalie Portman's dress was quite demure and a little bit old school, but the jacket she wore, which was like a take on a tuxedo jacket, but it was a floor-length cape.
Like a cape, yeah.
Yeah. And down the edge of the cape were the names of all the female directors who were shut out of the Oscars this year, which I thought was just fantastic.
Amazing.
I loved
it
so
much. You had Greta Gerwig, obviously. You had Lulu Wang from who directed The Farewell.
Yeah.
You had Greta Gerwig, who directed Little Women, and as listeners know, I was very upset not to see included in the Best Director nominees. You had Lorraine Scarafia, director of Hustlers, Lulu Wang, who directed The Farewell, Marielle Haller, who directed A Beautiful Day in the Neighbourhood, Celine Sciamma, who directed Portrait of a Lady on Fire, which is an absolutely brutally beautiful film.
These are all films that easily could have stood up against the directors that were nominated and in the Best Picture categories as well.
Yeah.
So...
100%.
Yeah, we call bullshit.
And it was just such a classy way of doing it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? She wasn't like holding a placard.
Yeah. She hadn't had it picked out in sequins like they did at the Grammy. Like they were doing at the Grammy.
Yeah. She didn't even need to actually say anything. But yeah, it was really amazing. It's amazing, whatever it is. Incredible. It's incredible.
She's incredible.
She is. Damn. I love her.
Anyway, we could look at dresses all day.
Yeah.
Moving right along, today's podcast is actually about something else altogether. Following on from Emily's heartbreak at the Oscars, the death of love, and, you know, the fact that it's Valentine's Day on Friday, or Galentine's Day, which is what I celebrate, and Valentine's Day, which is what everybody else celebrates.
Galentine's Day, you just like to think about Gal Gadot.
That's right. I watch Wonder Woman like 45 times.
Fair call.
In that film where she's married to John Hamm. Do you know what I mean?
Anyway, I know what you mean.
No, but seriously, so we thought that we'd try to, you know, stoke the fires of love again by talking about the rom-coms that'll make you believe in love.
Yeah.
Isn't that right?
Yeah, so if you're alone on Valentine's Day, but you still want to believe
you don't want to be bitter and twisted.
That you're going to have a happy ending. These are the rom-coms we think you should watch. Kylie, what's your number one pick?
Well, my number one pick... Okay, my number one pick was actually... you actually reminded me of this film. But I went through this phase of watching it over and over and over and over again. And it's so strange because it's not what anybody would consider a classic rom-com. It's written by Aaron Sorkin. And it's The American President.
I love this film.
And I just have a bottomless pit of love for this film. And now I'm thinking about it, I don't quite know why, but it is definitely, it's almost referenced in the film. There's a scene where she arrives at the White House for the first time and she's in the guard room signing in with her colleague and she says, do you know the scene I mean?
Yeah.
And she says, oh, there's just such a Capri-esque feeling about arriving at the White House on, was it Christmas Eve or it's in the winter or something like that. It's cozy, they've got big coats on, it's really adorable. And her colleague says, oh, he doesn't know who Capra is. And then this beautiful moment where the guard goes, sure I do, Capra, it's a wonderful life.
Exactly.
It's so great.
It's so good. Mr. Smith goes to Washington and he hands her the phone.
Says, you have a great day, Sydney Chambers.
Sydney.
That's right. And she goes in. And then...
so good.
It's so good. It's so cozy. And it's so beautifully political. And actually what I'm thinking
about... My name is Andrew Shepherd and I am the president.
Yeah, it's so good. And like, I'm pretty sure that... Richard Dreyfuss is supposed to be a Republican. And
I think so too. They don't make it explicit.
Yeah, but it's not explicit.
I think that's what it's supposed to be too.
Yeah, so anybody could watch it and think the good guy is their guy.
Yeah,
so
I mean, Andrew Sorkin wrote it, so I think it's probably...
It's pretty obvious that he's... Yeah. Yeah. And there's this beautiful friendship between him... between Andrew Shepherd and...
Played by Michael Douglas.
Michael Douglas. And the other greatest American president of all time.
Yes! Martin Sheen.
Martin Sheen. And it's just...
Who plays his chief of staff and oldest friend.
And one of the things I always look for, and I think that that is a common thread in the three films I've picked, is that the film works really hard to make you believe that these people, even though they're beautiful or whatever, that they would like
would
each other.
Would actually like. Because
fancy each other. They like each other.
And you know, there were a couple of movies that we talked about last week when we were spitballing ideas for this episode. And there's one in particular that I remember I said this about, where you actually, at the end, you're like, she wound up with the wrong guy.
Yeah.
You know? Like, the movie didn't make me believe in that relationship.
Yeah. You were looking over here.
Yeah.
But I feel like in American, The American President, it's such a good film all on its own.
It really is.
Without the romantic element, that even if at the end...
Michael J. Fox's supporting gig in that film is
like
one of my favourites of his ever.
The Sam Seaborn of that film, you know, because obviously he made American President before he went on to make The West Wing, didn't he? Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, because it's 95.
Like mid-90s,
It's 95 for American President. And yeah, you can sort of see that the sort of elements that would go on to be The West Wing, which is still one of my all-time favourite TV
shows. Yeah, oh, for sure. But I mean, Michael J. Fox is just so great playing this, like, neurotic, like, there's a bit where he calls him in the middle of the night and Michael Douglas is like, I can't remember exactly what time it is, but he's like, it's 3 a.m, you've got to get yourself a life.
That's right. Yeah, Michael J. Fox is great in that film. Everybody's great in that film.
It's so good. We didn't mention that Annette Bening plays the president's love interest.
Sydney Ellen Wade is her name.
Sydney Ellen Wade.
I called her Sydney Chambers, who's that priest from the TV show. Where they came from. It's the only other Sydney I know. Sydney Ellen Wade. Yeah. Just even their meet cute is like, it's so perfect. I don't know.
Their meet cute actually has an element that runs through my choices too, I think, which is that it's kind of feminist, right? Which is that it's the guy being impressed by the woman being strong and standing up for herself, you know? So the meet cute is that Annette Bening plays a lobbyist. And she's in an anti-office to the Oval Office.
Sitting with her back to the door.
With her back to the door, of course. And she goes on a I mean, rant is the wrong word, but she like she's, really gets into a great
she's laying
discourse
down the, yeah.
yeah, about, you know, what she's there to lobby for. And
it's
she...
The, is it, what does she call them? The,
oh. I can't remember. She says... Do you want to look it up?
Yeah, I want to look it up. One of the other things I love is when she goes... When she's like goes on that date with him and she thinks it's like she's doing her civic duty, representing America.
Yeah,
like,
that's actually a date.
Yeah, so cute. I love every bit about it. Do you know what? I wonder if now people might find their disparity in their
power
roles a
little
bit.
No, but they actually address that in the movie. You know, so I remember there's the bit where they sleep together for the first time, right? And they're like just kind of hanging out. And she's like, I'm going to go to the bathroom. And she comes out and she's stripped down and she's just wearing one of his shirts. And he's a widower and he's been widowed for quite a long time when the movie starts. And he gets like super awkward about it. And he says to her, I mean, I'm paraphrasing, I don't uncharacteristically for me remember the exact quotes. But he's like, you know, I have like a few reservations about this. Like there are a few things we could talk about. The first one being that one of us is, and she goes, the most powerful man in the world. Like, and I think that it's played kind of on two levels. Like I think she kind of is finding that sort of sexy, but it's also a very clear recognition of the fact that she is, you know, she's okay with that. Like
Because they do set it up. Sorkin does write it that she is his intellectual equal.
Absolutely.
On every level as well.
I'd have to watch it again, but I don't think that
there's definitely not in the text of the movie anyway icky.
Yeah.
But I'm just wondering if nowadays people would be like, eh, maybe not.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think...
Well, it's funny because the other film that I've... One of the other films I've got to talk about here is a very similar dynamic, except the genders are flipped. But anyway, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that in a minute. First of all,
the president has asked me to convey to you that he's sending his energy bill to the floor with a call for a 10% reduction.
The president's expecting our full support.
Yes, he is.
The president's dreaming, AJ. The president
Sydney
has...
critically misjudged reality. If he honestly thinks that the environmental community is going to whistle a happy tune while rallying support around this pitifully lame mockery of environmental leadership, then your boss is the chief executive of Fantasyland.
Good morning, Mr. President.
How are you today?
I couldn't be better. My apologies for the interruption.
Mr. President, I don't know what to say. I'm speechless.
All evidence to the contrary.
He loves her the moment he hears her.
Exactly. He doesn't even need to see her face.
Yeah.
He's attracted to her intellect and her passion.
And her zhuzh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Loving it.
Yeah.
So
my number one movie is, I mean, I think, it like, in a way, the movie that sort of set the standard for this genre, like the kind of the first modern movie to really do it, which is When Harry Met Sally.
It's the greatest.
It's kind of so obvious that I almost didn't want to do it, but then it's like, can you talk about rom-coms and not talk about When Harry Met Sally? What's great about this movie? Everything. Every single thing.
From the opening
is great
with it
in this
talking
movie.
To all the gorgeous couples. And
yes. Which so. I was sad to discover not long ago, those are not real couples. Those are actors and it's scripted.
No!
Terrible, eh?
Don't tell me things like that. I don't want to hear things like that.
But you know, I said before that something that I like about rom-coms is when, and this is, and it's vanishingly rare, when the woman isn't, you know, what you sometimes refer to as a manic pixie dream girl, which is basically shorthand for a male fantasy, you know. So a manic pixie dream girl, she's like super cute and like really like... A bit ditzy.
But she's got something.
Yeah, she's got something about her. Yeah,
she's uninhibited, and yet she might have a few quirky neuroses.
Which
that are
in
adorable.
Some ways you could say Sally Albright does. But the thing about Sally is that she does have all of her neuroses and stuff like that. But number one, she's fully aware of them, and they make her unconfident about herself. But at the same time, I mean, they make her incompetent in the sense that she's not like, I'm going to get a man with my quirky neuroses or whatever. Like, she's sometimes aware of it and it makes her, you know, uncomfortable. But I think the other thing about her that's really important is that she's, is that what Harry finds is the woman behind all of that stuff. You know, she's she's much more than just those, like, it, those neuroses and little quirks or whatever. I think maybe what movies afterwards have done is they've stopped going past those quirks and neuroses and made them the sum total of the female character.
Because they don't bother... One of the things that seem to happen to rom-coms is that they don't bother making them friends or... I mean, when Harry Met Sally is an entire movie about how they... their friendship and their connection to each other grow deeper and deeper and deeper over years and years
and years. Absolutely. I mean, you want a movie that makes you believe that they would actually like each other. Yeah. That's the vast...
And that it's going to last as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're never going to split up. They are in it for the long haul.
Yeah.
Unlike sort of some 90s Anna Faris thing where it's like they're in it for a couple of good one-night stands and, or two-night stands. And some awkward ghosting. And that's it. That's love.
Again, I feel like when Harry Met Sally set the standard for so many things that have just been... that have been used in a really lazy way since... So, like, the trope of a couple that hates each other until the very end when they realise they love each other, right?
Mm.
That's not really when Harry Met Sally, actually, because they don't hate each other the whole time. There's a long stretch of that movie where they're friends, But... But again, what Harry Met Sally does so brilliantly about it is that it shows you that when they get past, you know, those exteriors, and neither of them is terribly likable at face value, right? But you get past that and you... When Harry Met Sally does is instead of having two people who hate each other until the very end when they suddenly like each other for no discernible reason, they dislike each other at first, but once they get past their kind of unlikable exteriors, they have a really deep friendship and a real respect for each other, and that's what sets the foundation for their romantic love. But another thing that there's so much love about Harry and Sally, but something else that kind of thematically or in terms of the story that I really appreciate is that Sally doesn't need to change in this movie.
Because that's also a thing that I
hate. Real trope.
It's a real trope.
Where it's like, oh, the woman suddenly, the worst ones.
The grease, the breakfast club.
Yeah. Where it's all about her appearance. Yeah.
She
took off her glasses and cinched her waist.
Yeah.
I really hate that. But sometimes they even do it in ways where it's like... A movie that this really, really irritates me in is Morning Glory. Do you know that movie?
I might do a few
experiences. It has...
Rachel McAdams and Harrison Ford and Diane Keaton.
That's the one. And your boyfriend Patrick, what's his face?
Wilson.
Yeah, Patrick Wilson, that's the one.
Just sorting through the file of Patrick's in my head. Which is Patrick Bateman? No, he's a character. Hey, who?
Yeah, did I tell you that when I went to Knives Out with Jonathan, Chris Evans comes on the screen and he leans over to me and goes, which one of your boyfriends is that?
Mine. No. Plenty of Chris to go around. That was inappropriate, I'm going to edit that out.
Morning Glory. What I didn't like about Morning Glory is that in the end, she gives up her dream. Rachel McAdams gives up her dream to go with, that's what she realizes over the course of that movie, is that she's going to be with Patrick Wilson, and in doing that, she's not going to do the job that she's been working towards doing for the last 15 years or whatever.
Get out. I don't remember that. That's why I blocked that out of my head.
These are things that happen all the time in rom-coms. The woman has to change. The man is her savior.
Actually, do you know one of the other things in that film that really bugs me?
Well,
is there's a scene where she's got bangs and Harrison Ford gives her shit about having a fringe. Do you remember that?
No.
Yeah, he goes, oh, with your bangs, you should have bangs. Right. And then day she's got her bangs sweeping over. And I remember thinking, wait a minute, that's not right. Who gives a shit if someone's got a fringe?
This is something that happens in rom-coms over.
And if he is the kind of grown man who cares about stuff like that, that is someone you need to push.
That is not the man you should end up with at the end of the movie.
But I have to just admit that I would probably give up some dreams for Patrick Wilson. Maybe
your dreams of Chris Evans, for example.
I'd give that up for Patrick Wilson. God, I'm so sorry, Mum. Anyway.
So I love that about When Harry Met Sally, that it's... that Sally doesn't change and she doesn't have to change, and Harry doesn't need her to change. He doesn't realize that he loves her because she takes off her glasses and pins back her bangs.
He just realizes that
he loves her, you know?
Actually, one of the things, the scene I pulled up that I think about when I think about when Harry met Sally, because to me, it's a scene where he sees her at her very worst. And it's also, I have had a very similar experience to this, probably because of this. But, so just play it. Shall we play it?
Just play it.
All this time, I've been saying that he didn't want to get married. But the truth is, he didn't want to marry me. He didn't love me.
If you could take him back right now, would you?
No! But why didn't he want to marry me? What's the matter with me?
Nothing.
I'm difficult.
You're challenging.
I'm too structured. I'm completely closed off.
But in a good way.
No, no, no. I drove him away. And I'm gonna be 40.
When?
Someday.
In 8 years.
But it's there. It's just sitting there.
In 8 years.
In 8 years.
That scripts. Like, that's the script to end all scripts.
Sublime.
It's so good. There's not a bum note. There's not a wasted line anywhere in that whole movie. It is so good.
I want to watch it right now. If only we had the time.
I could just quote the whole thing for you.
I'm going to give you a lift over
in
a minute.
All the characters. Right. Okay. What's your number two, Kylie?
My number two. Funnily enough, there's a bit of a thread linking all of these films. My number two is a film that I must have seen. I have actually no idea how many times.
I've also seen this movie many, many times.
And it has had such a profound effect on my life. And it is Romancing the Stone, which I first saw at the Odeon Cinema in La Hutte. And Joan Wilder played
best name, incredible, best name for a romance novelist
incredible
ever.
Incredible Kathleen Turner.
God,
and again,
sex on a stick.
Michael Douglas, who I know, you know, you can say what you like about the guy, but I still love him to this day. Michael Douglas, who plays Jack, who is a bird smuggling,
like
life dodging,
yeah, general overall sort of criminal type
wastrel,
like, yeah,
who's hiding out in the jungles of Colombia. God, so it's an 80s film, so there are a lot
of
really dodgy things in this
one. It's a hell of a
setup. Incredible setup. So it starts in New York, where Kathleen Turner's just finished her...
She's a best-selling romance novelist.
Best-selling romance novelist. And she gets a frantic phone call from her sister, who's in Cartagena, Colombia. And she gets a crazy envelope with a map in it. So rather than going to a meeting with her editor and starting her book launch plans, she hightails it down to Colombia, where she's shepherded onto the wrong bus by the bad guys and ends up meeting Jack in a bit of a shootout on the side of a hill.
This is all true. This is exactly how the movie goes.
And it's that fish out of water kind of. She is your entry point to this exotic, crazy world of Colombian drug cartels.
Yeah.
And it's so dodgy. Like, this film would never get made today.
No way.
It would be... I mean, I would go and see it if it did, but it would never be made today. And he's a sort of sub-Indiana Jones-esque, someone who's got a whip and a Stetson hair. He's just like...
I love him so much.
And he's sort of like a disappointed... He's like... On paper, he would be the ultimate romance novel hero, but in person, he's kind of a jerk.
Yeah.
And she's not.
And of course, that's
feeble.
The whole thing about
the
movie is a subversion
of the whole thing.
The whole genre.
Because the whole thing is like, what happens after that? And they rode off into the sunset together. And that is the beautiful thing about Romancing the Stone. The thing that I love the most about it is
Michael Douglas and... Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, go on. Yes. You've got something to say about Michael Douglas. I would stand... I will not say anymore.
You had just said the thing that I love the most about the movie is that.
And you shouted Michael Douglas. Maybe. No.
What's the thing you love the most about the movie?
What is the thing I love the most about the movie? Oh, is that it does answer that question about what happens afterwards.
Yeah,
kind of. It's a pair of crocodile skin boots and a sailing ship in the middle of of Central Park West, New York.
Yeah.
Love it. God, I have not seen that film for more than 10 years.
Yeah, probably the same, but I had seen it many times. My mum and I used to love that movie. I
still tell you every single time.
Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner, I was going to say. Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner, they're like, you don't have couples like that anymore, really. I mean, I guess, like, Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone have done a couple of movies together, but, like, you know, there used to be the, like, Katharine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy.
Yeah, that's right.
Where they would often play...
Yeah, the madcap comedy kind of...
Yeah. And it was, like, Kathleen Turner and Michael Douglas, in a way, were sort of the last ones to do that.
And I would watch them and something together right now.
Oh, same!
Oh, how come nobody's done that here?
Brought them back together.
Hollywood, get on it. Come on.
Yeah, seriously.
Get her on the Kaminsky
method. Get her on the Kaminsky method. Who's her agent?
Oh my God, that would be so good.
That's such a good idea.
I love that show so much. Anyway, so that's one of my faves. And we haven't even talked about adorable comedy sidekick Danny DeVito in that film.
Yeah, who also often...
One of the other films we're going to talk about later in this little pocket series is
War of the Roses,
which is also DeVito, Turner, and Douglas. But we'll get to that later because
we'll talk about that another time.
Opposite of what we're talking about today.
Should I talk about my number two?
Yeah, go for it.
My number two is a very new rom-com, and one that I think, and I wrote a column about this last year, is a direct descendant of When Harry Met Sally, and that has always been my maybe. Fantastic Netflix original romantic comedy. So it's kind of interesting because it has two like American Asian leads, Ali Wong and Randall Park, but that sort of all of that is totally secondary to the fact that it is an exceptionally well done, very, very funny rom-com.
I haven't seen it and I really wish I had.
You haven't seen it? I mean, it's on Netflix. Go watch it.
Yeah, well.
The reason I think it's the direct descendant of When Harry Met Sally is because it also has the woman who doesn't need to change. Like, the woman who's going to just, like, she's on her track. She's got her ambition.
Yeah.
She's going to do that. And the guy, if he really loves her, what he's going to do is drop his lame gig, which is actually literally true in the case of this guy, and follow her, you know? Like, he's gonna sew himself to the coattail of her dreams.
Of her dream. Oh, that's nice. That's a nice change.
But he's also not pathetic. Like, he's played for laughs sometimes, but he's not a pathetic character, but definitely, like, in this relationship, she's the one with the ambition and she's the one with the drive. And
it sounds like so
damn lucky
in my wheelhouse
to have her.
Yeah.
You know, which is sort of the conclusion that he comes to. It also has an outstanding Keanu Reeves playing himself, playing a version of himself.
Anything with Keanu Reeves in it.
Oh, I mean, yes, same.
I can't think of any rom-coms with Keanu Reeves in it. There need to be more. Apart from that, like that.
Terrible one with Winona Ryder a few years ago.
Oh, that's such a bummer because to me that seemed like this is the rom-com that I need at this stage in my life.
I thought it sucked.
But everybody said it's bad.
It's bad. They're the only two speaking roles in the whole movie. And it's a lot. That's a lot. But it's like a play, you know? That's a lot to put on two people. In a film, I thought the script was like very hit and miss.
Oh, that's
probably
pity.
More miss than hit.
That's really pretty.
It should have been really good, but it just didn't. It didn't work for me. I mean, to the point where I would say, don't even bother seeing it. Yeah.
So my last movie is Long Shot, and I have to. The weird thing about Long Shot is that I didn't actually like the film.
I remember, so I haven't seen this movie, but I remember when it first got announced, I remember saying to you then, I already know that I hate everything about this movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I could totally understand why, but I had kind of hopes mostly because Seth Rogen is, like, my dream man.
Yeah, I know, I do love Seth Rogen.
Up and down.
I mean, I would take Jason Segel, we can split it.
Anyway... In real world, I went to the movie, I didn't love it, but I didn't love it because of the weird centrist politics that was kind of like awkward, and a lot of people did love it because it was like, oh, we can all be friends.
Charlize Theron plays a politician.
She plays a, I want to say senator, or she's make, yeah, she's gearing up to make her run for the, possibly for the presidency or the, maybe, I don't know. Anyway, something like that. She's on the way up, and she's possibly a Republican. And Seth Rogen is a writer, and she ends up hiring him. They went to school together, I think. They have a very tenuous, they know who each other are, but they're not pals. And you know, I'm not 100% sure if that's right.
That sounds right to me. I think that is exactly right. I haven't seen it, but yeah. that's what I understood, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so they meet at a party. He falls on his face in spectacular Seth Rogen fashion right in front of him, which is the first thing.
The reversal.
A total reversal of that whole manic pixie dream girl falls over in front of the dream boy kind mm-hmm. of thing. And she kind of sweeps him off to be her speechwriter, and he's kind of like, but I'm a bleeding heart liberal lefty and you're a hard ass. And she's like, be it, but you're really good at your job, so let's just do this thing. And in the course of their working together, she kind of lets her the sort of hard shell that she's had to build up as a woman in politics, she kind of lets her guard down around him, and he becomes more of herself, and he is kind of charming. That works really hard to make you believe that these two people would fall in love with each other.
Maybe I should watch it.
Yeah, but it's also not great. I mean, it's not, I'm not saying, it's just the way they are together. Again, that thing that I love, they become really good mates and they have a really good time together and they mm-hmm. enjoy each other's company.
Mm-hmm.
And you believe that he doesn't just love her because she's super hot in a power suit. And she is super hot in a power suit. But, and you can also believe that she, this incredible, powerful woman, is going to love this schlub, this lovable schlub. It's yeah. not that awkward thing where, you know, the incredibly gorgeous woman loves the loser more cup any movie that's got Kevin James in it.
Oh yeah.
Speaking of really bad rom-coms,
yeah, I mean, that's I do have a bit of a bee in my bonnet about that, because it never goes the other way
ever. And I was racking my brains last night when I was thinking about talking about this film. I was racking my brains trying to think about it, but you know, the fact of the matter is that actually Seth Rogen's not a schlub. He's a gorgeous guy, he's funny.
Not anymore.
I've always found him like just delish, but anyway, that's me.
Yeah, I like a bit of schlub, and
he's also an excellent craftsman.
As I've said before,
he makes clay pottery. Anyway,
yeah, he does. That's crazy.
It's crazy.
He makes lots of like bongs and ashtrays.
Yeah, bongs and ashtrays. That's his wheelhouse.
As I've said before, I'd take schlubby Jason Segel. Like, I like the Forgetting Sarah Marshall Jason Segel.
That is a great Jason Segel, especially when he's like ugly crying and
stuff. I know. I really love him.
I do love that film. Although the only thing I have in my head whenever I think about that film is
Full Frontal Nudity.
Oh, and Russell Brand doing the, like, when she's riding him like he's a bronco.
Kristen Bell is so great in that movie.
Pour acid in my head to get that image.
Oh my god, she's so good. Great.
She's so,
I mean, she's great
movie.
Anyway, but
yeah,
she's really great in the movie. But yeah, Shlubby Jason Segel all
Speaking
the way.
Speaking of great rom-coms,
I should have talked about Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Oh, we could, honestly, when we were doing the, when we were kind of, as Emily called it, spitballing for this episode, the list of great rom-coms that we could have regaled you with today.
On and on.
But Emily's got one last classic. We're going to race through it because we're running out of time.
I've got one more. Third choice is Say Anything. It's an 80s classic. It stars John Cusack at his most beautiful John Cusack-y, and Ione Skye, a woman whose career has been, who's been underserved terribly by her career. I tried to get my husband to let me name our daughter Ione. He wouldn't let me. That's a different story.
That's a great name.
Isn't it a beautiful name? Ione.
So great.
Yeah. I also like...
Isn't she Donovan Leitch's daughter?
She might be. I also liked Sloan, as in Peterson. He didn't like that either. That's one for my therapist, moving right along. So what's great about Say Anything apart from those two?
Hey, can I just butt in and say that I don't want to sell anything. I don't want to buy anything or process anything as a career. I don't want to sell anything bought or processed, or buy anything sold or processed, or process anything sold, bought or processed, or repair anything sold, bought or processed. You know, as a career, I don't want to do that. Just wanted to say. Anyway, go on.
So good. You know, Cameron Crowe wrote this movie.
Yes.
That's a real Cameron Crowe line right there. Like, if you didn't know and you fed someone that line and said who wrote it, you'd say Cameron Crowe.
You know, as a career, I don't want to do that.
I mean, I think this movie is best known for the scene where John Cusack stands outside Ione's guy's window holding
Lloyd Dobler.
A boombox. Lloyd Dobler.
What a name.
And it is, like, in some ways I think that typifies the movie, but not in all ways. Like, he's not really like a sad puppy, you know, just trailing after her. Like, it's another movie where the guy kind of has to prove himself to the girl a little bit. Yeah. Or they've both got things to learn about themselves.
Because her dad, who is beautifully played by
John Mahoney,
is super anti him, right? And it's a dynamic that Kevin Smith sort of riffs on in Mallrats with Michael Rooker and, her name's gone out of my head. But yeah. It's a fun dynamic.
Yeah.
So kind of, yeah.
It may be slightly tropey, but it works. You know, like he's.
I think it only because it's only tropey because it works. Yeah.
And he, you know, so he turns out to, so he's like the overbearing dad who doesn't want her to go live her dreams. Like, she's got She's got like a fellowship to study England, and her dad doesn't want her to go. And Lloyd really loves her, but he still thinks that she should go because he wants her to follow her dreams. And then it turns out that her dad is, like, ripping off his...
That's right, her dad's a crim, eh?
Yeah.
So her dad's, like, bankrupt, they're bankrupt.
Yeah. And, you know, and so Lloyd, they wind up together, and then Lloyd winds up going to England with her, and there's that great last shot of them sitting on the plane holding hands. And I don't, like, I love this movie because... I feel like it's very, I feel like the power dynamic is really even between the two of them. Like,
I think you're supposed to feel like she's slightly too good for him.
Like, she's slightly too good for him.
In the
end,
like, the fact that he supports her and she doubts herself, that kind of evens out. But
that's it. And again, it's a movie where she doesn't have to change.
Yeah.
He's going to support her to do what she wants to do.
He follows her.
And he follows her.
Because he has got shit all going on in his life.
Yeah. And after standing outside playing In Your Eyes on a boombox.
Well, I've dearly wanted this to happen to you on a number of occasions.
Someone make Kylie's Valentine's Day.
Please.
Goes down outside her window with a boombox.
Anyone stands outside my window, they're getting a shoe in the head. Scene is longer than I thought.
I could look at that shot of John Cusack holding up that boombox forever.
Yeah,
I could just have that on a recurring loop in my glasses.
It's beautiful.
Hey, oh god, I love this era of John Cusack so much.
Gross Point Blank. That's another one of his films that I absolutely should have stuck that on.
Not really a rom-com.
Together and he like gives up his life
of assassinating people,
killing people to go and get her.
Yeah, in Gross Point Blank he plays like a disillusioned assassin for hire who goes to his high school reunion to try to reconcile. Or does he go to try to reconcile with her?
I think he goes to try to reconcile with
Minnie Driver.
That's right.
His high school girlfriend, Minnie Driver.
He's a radio DJ in their hometown.
That's right. She's a radio DJ.
I feel like it's it was his last...
Great movie of the era.
His last kind of rom-com-ish kind of...
Oh, when was High Fidelity?
Oh, no, that was definitely before, long time before.
Gross Point Blank. Was it? Oh, okay.
Well, I say that.
I also love High Fidelity.
Oh, also, I don't think that film is that's not a rom-com.
No, not really. Not really, no.
Because he's also a massive douchebag.
Yeah.
And I actually much prefer John Cusack, cold killer, to...
Same. I would take Gross Point Blank.
John Cusack.
Yeah, totally.
Only retentive... Record store owner. Anyway, folks,
I agree.
There are so many more movies that we could talk about today, and I would dearly love to talk about.
But that's six anyway. Six movies bangers that will make you believe in love. That's enough to get you through Valentine's night.
I'm so sorry that we didn't have any. They're very white and they're very hit.
Always Been My Baby isn't.
Oh, no, yes, of course. But the rest are super white.
Romantic comedy is a really white genre. That's one of the reasons why Always Be My Baby got people so excited, you know, like even before it came out, because it was two Asian Americans starring as leads in a rom-com. It's not a diverse genre insofar as any are.
So I know that Channing Tatum has talked before about doing a gay rom-com or producing a gay rom-com, and I think that would be amazing, like a mainstream film. I'm sure there are a lot of LGBTQ rom-coms out there, but I can think of
one reasonably mainstream one, Kissing Jessica Stein.
Yes.
Although she does wind up with a guy at the end.
Right. So it's
but until she winds up with a guy, it's a good lesbian rom-com.
Yeah, but I think it kind of undercuts the...
She ends up with a guy.
She ends up with a dude.
It's not a great message.
Great. Bi rom-com. How about that?
Yep, bi rom-com. I like it. Yeah. Still. What about Love, Simon?
Yeah, brilliant, which is on Amazon Prime. I don't even know that I edited that. Anyway, we.
Come at us, listeners. Come at us with your favourite rom-coms, what you think about our choices. Tell us where the diverse rom-coms are, where we want to watch them.
Yeah, because
let's have a viewing party.
Tell us what you think about Michael Douglas.
Please tell us what you think about Michael Douglas. And Jason Segel, schlubby or not schlubby, cast your vote.
And Seth Rogen, the perfect man.
We're going to put polls up.
There will be polls. Seth Rogen is perfect. God, my mum would be so happy if I came home with Seth Rogen. She would die happy.
Yeah, my mum would be happy with either of them. Like, Jewish
princes. Look what I brought you, mama. She would be happy. Anyway, moving along. Thanks so much for listening. Come at us on Twitter at @NZ_off. That was terrible. So many ads. And join us on our Facebook page, which is @OffscriptNZ. And
email us at an address that I can never remember.
@offscriptnz@gmail.com.
That's the one.
And you can find us on Anchor. I've just been alerted.
Hey, yeah, it's on Apple Podcasts.
Apple Podcasts.
You can find us on Apple Podcasts.
Spotify. Jesus. I'm still dealing with, like...
We're in slight delirium. Well, I think we live blogged the Oscars for, I would say, like approximately 12 or 13 days.
It was a very long time.
It was a really long time.
By the end of it, I had definitely aged. And I'm still recovering because I don't sprint back as fast as I
used to. If the Irishman had won Best Picture, I would have just like...
I would have rage quit.
I would have just...
Life. I'd have been like, nah,
if
I'm moving
I've gone
to
through
Mars.
All of that and the Irishman had won Best Picture. But Parasite won Best
Parasite
Picture.
Parasite won.
Huge.
We didn't even get a chance to talk about that.
All we talked about was the frogs. Maybe we'll do a Parasite episode.
I think we should do a whole Parasite episode. In fact, I think what we should do is go and see Parasite.
Yeah.
Together.
Yeah.
And then... Like record it straight after. Sounds tell us what you think, guys.
We'll do that.
We're gonna do that. See you next week when we'll be talking about more romances. See you later. Bye.